think this time I'll do a podcast.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into this week's edition of the Awful Announcing Podcast. Ben Heisler with you. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I was very fortunate enough to talk to the voice of Super Bowl 52 on Westwood One, Kevin Harlan. He's also the voice of the NFL on CBS, the NBA on TNT, and plenty more outlets where that legendary voice is heard. Kevin Harlan has been a part of it for a long time. We go through his history, share some stories along the way, a whole lot of fun with one of the great voices in professional broadcasting right now, and excited to have a chance to sit down and share that conversation with you. But it is time to play our game where we give you, the listener, a chance to win $50 to Amazon.com, courtesy of our friends over at Clipit, by just following along with what's going on in the news. We play a couple clips and give you a chance to win. And today, we are joined by Phil in Detroit. Phil correctly identified Kevin Harlan as this week's guest, and he joins us now. What's up, Phil?
Too much. How are you doing, Ben?
Everything is good. I appreciate you joining us. You correctly identified that Kevin Harlan was going to be our featured guest this week. Had a fantastic conversation with him. Looking forward to you guys getting a chance to hear it. But before we do that, there is an opportunity for you, Phil, to win $50 to Amazon.com. And all you have to do is identify two of these clips that we're going to play you courtesy of Clipit. You get them both right, that's $50. Get one of them, it's just $25. If you get none of them right, then unfortunately there are no prizes for you. Are you ready to play?
I am ready.
All right, Phil, your first clip involves a familiar longtime reporter who decided that he needed to investigate the ice cream habits of Super Bowl winning head coach Doug Peterson.
I called Doug Peterson's wife Jeannie through his press conference tray. I asked him, is he dead serious about ice cream at home as well as at the football facility? She said, absolutely. He likes vanilla and he's got to have a banana split and that'll make him happy. Me, Trey, I'm a Cherry Garcia guy, Ben and Jerry's. I'm sure Brewski's got that TB12 avocado ice cream going in the room at night, right?
Yeah, I don't eat that, Trey.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, full disclosure, I would absolutely take Cherry Garcia over avocado ice cream. But if someone presented avocado ice cream, Phil, I think I'd give it a try. Which reporter was investigating the ice cream habits of the Super Bowl winning head coach?
Was that Sal Palantonio?
Absolutely it was. Sal Palantonio is the correct answer. So $25 to Amazon.com is yours. Nicely done. Let's move on over to question number two. It was a big party in the city of Philadelphia after they won their first Super Bowl in team history. And this particular celebrity of the Philadelphia area decided he wanted to get involved in the party. So, Phil, I need you to tell me which celebrity this is that got involved in the Super Bowl celebration.
How crazy is this?
I was amazing. You know, I'm happy for the whole city of Philadelphia. We're going to have a lot of fun now. We up next, and I'm going to do my best to do it.
First Super Bowl?
Yeah.
You love it?
Well, they're kind of undefeated when I go to the game, so I must be the lucky son, but congrats.
One thing, you're next.
Trust the process.
So there you go. That was one Philadelphia celebrity enjoying himself in the middle of all the action. Which Philadelphia celebrity, Phil, was that?
That was Joel Embiid.
Yes, it was. You certainly trusted the process and got yourself $50 to Amazon.com. Phil in Detroit, thanks so much for playing the Awful Announcing Podcast game courtesy of our friends over at Clipit. Enjoy that $50 to Amazon, my friend.
Great. Thank you, Ben.
Coming up on the other side, my one-on-one with the voice of the Super Bowl on the radio, Kevin Harlan of Westwood One. He joins us next on the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Welcome back to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
Brady, second down and 10 from his 49, shotgun snap. Here comes the rush. He's hit. He spins away. He resets. He cocks his arm. He throws long in the end zone to our left. Jump ball. It's ricocheted around and incomplete in the end zone. Zeros on the clock. It's over. The Eagles have beaten the New England Patriots 41-33 in Super Bowl 52. They have finally done it.
That highlight courtesy of the good folks over at Westwood One. The voice you heard is that of Kevin Harlan, who has just completed his eighth season as the voice of the Super Bowl and the voice of Monday Night Football on Westwood One. He is also the play-by-play voice for CBS's coverage of the NFL and the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. You can also hear him on the NBA on TNT as well. Before that, he spent 9 seasons with the Minnesota Timberwolves, 8 years as the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, and plenty more in between. He was also recently named the 2017 National Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports Media Hall of Fame. A man that really needs no introduction, but we'll give him one regardless. And I started my conversation with Kevin Harlan. I asked Kevin about when he first tried out for his high school 10-watt radio station in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I asked him the question, what do you remember about Kevin Harlan, high school play-by-play man? And do you ever go back and listen to any of your earliest stuff?
Well, Ben, good to be on with you. I wanted to be a commercial airline pilot. That's really what I wanted.
Really?
Green Bay, Wisconsin. And for some reason, I had a grandfather who was in the trucking business. And I don't know if it kind of began with that, the fact that he ran a company that was based all over the Midwest and had trucks that went from Minneapolis down to Dallas and over to Denver and St. Louis and everything in between. But I wanted to be an airline pilot. That's really what I grew up wanting to be. And my dad, one day, who was a journalism major at Marquette and ran the student newspaper, he was a sports editor for the Marquette student-run newspaper back in the late 50s when he was there. And then went to work for United Press International right out of college. So he had a journalism background. And I remember bringing home my report card one day, and he knew I wanted to be a pilot. Of course, a pilot has to have, at that time, before computers, had to have a great knowledge of mathematics and trigonometry and all kinds of pretty intricate numerical-type equations. And he took a look at my report card, and he took a look at me. He took a look at my math grade, and he took a look at me. Took a look, one more look at that math grade, and kind of looked up in the air and said, you know, if I had to do it all over again, I think I'd get in radio and television. So that was kind of the push and kind of opened my eyes getting in broadcasting. And I went to an all-boys Catholic school in Green Bay, and we had, for whatever reason, a 10-watt student-run radio station. It was over the air, and you could pick it up, you know, in the surrounding couple miles around the high school. And it had a nice little signal, and it was run by the students. And so when he kind of said that, kind of planted an idea in my mind, and I tried out for the football play-by-play job. And what they did was they showed a film on a blackboard by just a couple minutes, and they wanted you to talk into a cassette tape recorder and record what you saw. And then they would go back and listen to it, and they would pick the best one they thought to get the job for doing the play-by-play for the football team that fall. So it was my turn, and I grab it, and I put this film on the blackboard, and I'm calling the play. And there's a fumble on the play, and there's a big pile trying to dig out the ball and get the ball and on the fumble, and there's not a lot of movement. And all of a sudden, one of our guys starts jumping up and down. And I'm describing the play. I said, well, they're trying to unravel the bodies. Oh, wait. I see Joe Ellinger jumping up and down for the cadets for ovulation. And obviously the word I was looking for was jubilation. But said ovulation, which I'll guarantee you at 14, I did not know what that meant. But the priests and the nuns and listened to all these tapes heard that. Neither they thought that, oh, my God, it's a miracle. Or this guy is going to, you know, keep us laughing through these broadcasts. And so I guess the latter, and I got the job and have not looked back since. I caught the bug, and my dad kind of planted the seed, and that's kind of how I got my start.
I love that you were able to be a part of high school radio, because that's something that's very near and dear to my heart as well. I was fortunate enough to be able to work for, I think we had maybe a 50-watt station over at New Trier High School just outside of Chicago. And I, too, had a similar experience with using the wrong word in the wrong time. We were doing a 15-hour radiothon. we were raising money for Children's Memorial Hospital in Chicago. And it was, I think, my senior year, and I was planning the whole event as a special events coordinator. And I get on, I hadn't slept at all, and it's 7 o'clock in the morning. We're supposed to go all the way until 10 o'clock at night. I go, this is so exciting. We can't wait for this 15-hour radiothon. We have all these guests. We're hoping to raise a gastronomical amount of money. So we'll take all of your calls, and immediately the phone starts ringing. It was like one line at the time, and I pick up, we go to commercial, and I pick up, and it's my mom, and she goes, gastronomical, Ben? Really?
Oh, man, isn't that great?
So,
isn't that funny?
But I love hearing those stories, because what I loved most about it is that, at least when I had the opportunity to do it, is it gave you an excuse to not only get reps on the mic, but if you were hosting a talk show, you could call anybody. You had an excuse to try and set up whatever guests you wanted, and basically it was under the guise of, I'm a high school radio host, I'd love to have you on, and it's sort of one of the earliest memories I have of really starting to network in a business that you need to network in.
I don't know, Ben, that you've got as many high school radio stations now. I have no idea. I think they're probably more internet-based. I think you probably have...
Yeah.
You know, ways where stations are now more internet oriented, and you can do that, and moms and dads and the relatives and the kids, if the team is awake, and dial something in on their laptop or on their phone and listen to the game that way, which makes so much more sense. And they've got the equipment now, which it can do, and it gives every high school a chance to do that. I don't think it's that difficult to do. So. What the internet has done for our business is profound in terms of the information we can get, the stories and the video clips we can see. But for the high schools, like you and I were talking, it can provide this, invaluable experience for these kids to get basically on-air experience and learn how to conduct themselves when they're broadcasting and prepare and everything else. So it's a wonderful benefit of the internet and what these schools, I'm sure, are trying to really parlay into another aspect of writing and journalism and constructing that kind of a career.
But before I go back to some of your early calls and your early times as a broadcaster, I want to follow up on one thing, because I love that we're sort of getting into where radio is going, predominantly on the ability to go internet-based and be on demand. And as somebody who has spent a lot of time in people's living rooms and people's bedrooms as the voice of radio, now over with Westwood One, what do you think of the way in which radio is going, that everything has become much more accessible, that podcasts have begun to become much more mainstream? What do you make of it all?
Well, I love seeing it, because anything that can perpetuate our business is something that I am obviously very much in back of. And I think that when we continue to see the evolution of how people are consuming television on their phones, tablets, computers, whatever, the same is happening with radio. Satellite radio certainly has been something that is new, and people are still getting used to it, but the numbers increase for SiriusXM. Podcasts are going crazy.
Yeah.
I guess it's on demand, which is, it fits on your schedule and not when it's going to run. And I think anything that can continue to build and keep this great story going, because radio is what began it all. And I still continue to believe that the theater of the mind, your imagination, what you're able to conjure up from the words of two guys like us talking, or from the description of a ball game, if you can't see it with your own eyes, has a very powerful place in the way you consume media. And the podcast, I think, actually, in some ways, will help perpetuate radio, give you a better appreciation for people talking, hearing their voices, listening for signs of inflection or emotion or whatever that you can then draw up and maybe in your mind's eye, see where two people are having a cup of coffee and visiting, which is the most basic form of communication we have. And so I am thrilled with all of this, and I think it's going to continue to lead us to a very stable, although nothing will ever replicate seeing it and experiencing it in person, or the replay and the shocking video that can happen. But if, for instance, if you go back and you watch whatever video is available on the Kennedy assassination back in 1963,
yeah.
I think if you listen to the radio reports with the sirens in the background and the rumbling of concerned voices and screams in the background of some of the reports that were given, I think you can, in your mind's eye, come up with the same thing that your eyes revealed to you as you were watching that footage, those reports. And I think that's pretty powerful. So I think it's incumbent on all of us, you, me, and everybody that's in this business, to continue to evolve and hopefully with getting better ourselves, and that is a constant refrain for me. How can I get better? How can I evolve in the business? How can I better describe a play or a situation or report on something? That will continue to reel in these people and keep radio and audio only alive. And that it's a responsibility, but one we like, I'm sure.
We're joined by Kevin Harlan, the radio play-by-play voice of the Super Bowl on Westwood One. You can also hear him on the NBA on TNT, also the NFL on CBS as well. He's kind enough to join us here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. I love that answer because there's such a connection for you to the greats of the past. Like I'm looking on your Twitter page right now, and there's the picture of Graham McNamee broadcasting the 1924 World Series, which is great. And there's a picture of you, Rich Gannon, and Dick Enberg, a former Indiana guy who I had the pleasure of meeting several years ago. And yet there's still an appreciation for where the future of the industry is going. I love that you're sort of looking at it from both a past and future perspective, because it is one way to keep it alive while also not forgetting how important those early broadcasters and the ability to create true theater of the mind really were. So that's just one thing I wanted to say before we move on. I always love asking broadcasters this question. It can sort of go back to maybe your early days in Green Bay and maybe as you headed to the University of Kansas. But I love asking broadcasters this question, especially those that do play-by-play, about who they first listened to growing up and what they remember about those calls and those broadcasters. So growing up in Wisconsin, was it Bob Uecker? Was it Jim Irwin? Who were the guys that maybe influenced you the most? And was there anybody that you feel like you emulated most growing up and first becoming a broadcaster?
Well, I listened to the first voice that I really recall was that of John Facenda of NFL Films, and that was followed by Keith Jackson, who just passed away, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Don Crickey's voice, but I remember listening to Don Crickey do TWA radio commercials out of Chicago radio stations when I was driving to school with my dad in the morning, and we would always listen to Chicago WGN or WBBM sports driving to my high school, which is about a 10-15 minute drive. He would always have us in the car at 7:45 so we could listen to that sportscast. And I always remember Don Crickey's voice. So Don Crickey was a very prominent broadcaster and still broadcasting, I believe, Notre Dame football right now, if I'm not mistaken, on radio. So he was an early voice. Lindsey Nelson, for no other reason than I heard him more on radio at the time on Mutual than on television. The only local type broadcasters I heard, and the two voices that helped me think along the way of being ultra descriptive were that of Jim Durham, at that time on WCFL in Chicago, which many worked for a variety of stations, is the voice, the radio voice of the Chicago Bulls.
That's right.
And Joe Tate, who was at that time on 3WE Radio in Cleveland. And in Green Bay, because those were on the Great Lakes, we could, as is Green Bay, I could pick up those broadcasts pretty clearly growing up. And so I listened to their description, their attention to detail, and really enjoyed that. A voice that I really, and a guy that I latched on to early on, was, actually there were two. One was Jim Simpson of NBC and NBC Radio, who, by the way, did the very first Super Bowl on radio for NBC Radio, and a guy named Chuck Thompson, who was out in Baltimore, who did the Colts, did the Orioles, great voice. Occasionally did Game of the Week baseball telecasts on NBC. And I think that's where I probably first heard his voice. And those are the voices that I really grew up on. And and I would tape them in my on my cassette recorder and put them under my pillow at night, hit the play, and fall asleep listening to a variety of voices. One night it might be Keith Jackson. One night it might be John Facenda. One night it might be Jim Simpson. And I thought, you know, if nothing else, as a 13, 14-year-old kid, you know, who was growing into an adult, you know, these would be in my mind and could help guide me and kind of serve as a roadmap. And while I would maybe try to imitate them, knew I could never be them, but at least it would, like, form, help the muscles in my vocal cords, I thought at the time, to be like them, to have that resonance and that pace and everything else. Now, whether I sound anything like them at all today, I truly doubt, but I do know that is, to this day, and I'm in my mid-50s, to this day, I can hear those voices in my head, and I like that. I like the fact that much like maybe Nick Foles or Carson Wentz or Tom Brady would visualize their heroes, Joe Montana or whoever they follow when growing up. I mean, that's what the voices do in my mind. They serve always as a compass, and I'm glad I haven't forgotten that. So that's what I used to do. And I used to practice doing games off TV in my bedroom all the time. I mean, like, for hours and hours and hours a day growing up. And I'm sure my parents were outside the door listening and going, oh, my God, we have got a real problem. We've got a nutcase on our hands. But that's what I used to do, and those are the voices I tried to copy. And while I fall woefully short of their greatness and how they sounded, I like to think that I continue to evolve toward that. And maybe the older I get, the more I'll have in my own mind a sound like those guys had. But those are always ingrained in what I think a broadcaster should sound like, because I had such great respect for their work and their voices.
So even though they've stayed with you, and you've mentioned that you use them as a roadmap along the way and for guidance as part of your call, at what point in your life, Kevin, did you feel like you found your own voice? So many broadcasters will do what you did and try and find a voice that speaks to them in play-by-play or talk show broadcasters that they feel that they connect with, but it takes a while to sort of figure out their own voice. When do you think that happened for you?
That's a great question, Ben. I honest to God think that it wasn't until about 15 years ago.
Really?
I think in my late 30s, mid-30s, late 30s. I don't know the exact time, and I would always listen to my call. I was never satisfied. You're too fast. You're too high. I need more description. I need better words. I used to beat myself, and still do. It is torture to sit back and grade myself, which I do on every broadcast. And I constantly, I just have line after line of notes and reminders and things that I use that hopefully will get me on track. Now, sometimes I can hear it, and I'm so happy when I do, but a lot of times I don't. And I don't think until my mid to late 30s, approaching 40, did I feel like I was getting to where I wanted to go. And it's probably way too complex and way too weird to explain how that process all worked. But suffice it to say that I was, while I was climbing in the business, I was never satisfied with what I sounded like. And would try to not copy others, but if I heard for instance, when I was at Fox and I left the Chiefs, the Chiefs for 9 years on radio.
Right.
And I went to Fox and I started working beside and under Summerall and Stockton. Now, I don't know that we have two voices in the business today as good. Maybe Shulman. Dan Shulman's voice is incredible. But when Fox began doing the NFL, they hired four young guys. Joe Buck, Tom Brenneman, Kenny Albert, and me. In addition to the two flagship guys, Summerall and Dick Stockton. And I remember, and I was 35, 34, I forget, I was in my mid-30s. And I remember really paying attention to Stockton and hearing Dick's voice and thinking, oh my, how in the world can they hire someone like me to be on the same roster as someone like Dick Stockton and Pat Summerall?
Wow.
And it caused me a lot of, I said, I got to get to work. I mean, it's one thing to do, you know, NFL football and radio for a local team, which I was blessed beyond measure to do. But now that I'm on a national level, I mean, I've got to tighten the screws here. I've got to get. So that was a real eye opener for me. And I spent the next many years trying to figure out how I'm going to evolve into that. And I still think I'm doing it. But there was a time when I was about 40, you know, roughly 40, a couple years before, a couple years after, that I think I kind of found what I was shooting for. Now, whether that was because I was that age and your voice really doesn't become what it's going to become until you're probably in your 30s. You know, I talk to kids all the time and they're 22, 23, and I hear their voices and I said, listen, you sound like this now. If you continue to work on it and continue to listen to others and pick up things here and there, I said, you will sound dramatically different at 35. You'll sound dramatically different from 35 to 45, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it's just the way the voice polishes itself off and becomes more mature and has what it has when you become an older man and woman. So, and I tell my daughter that. My daughter's 24, and I say, you think Megyn Kelly's voice was like this? You know, she's in her upper 40s. Think she sounded like this at 24? No,
right.
Of course she didn't. So, and as it's a long answer to your question, but not until just like in the last decade or so do I feel like I've kind of found the path that I need to follow and stick to it and listen and try to tweak it literally every single broadcast.
Well, that's encouraging because at the age of 29 and still sounding like Mickey Mouse on helium, I found a way to niche myself into the radio and podcast market.
Oh, you sound great. I guarantee you, there are so few guys who in their 20s sound like they're going to sound, and I sounded, I'm sure, exactly, you know, like you sound like you're a young broadcaster. I sounded like I was a young broadcaster, and that's just the difference that age in this business does to delivery, pacing, inflection, and your vocal cords, if they're not damaged in some way.
Right.
And so you talk to any of these guys, they don't sound anything like they did, you know, when they were 25, like they do now when they're 55. And that's good. Whereas an athlete, their skills erode the longer they play, the older they get. A broadcaster's voice and the broadcasting style and pacing and everything else improves and gets better, and like a good bourbon or whiskey,
yeah,
it gets better as you go along, and that's what I was hanging my head on. But I've listened to you, so I know you're being self-deprecating, but you're right where you should be, and you sound terrific. And I know I did not sound as polished as you did at your age. I may have had a job that was a major league job, but I never considered myself anywhere close to being that, and I'm still not even close to being satisfied now, but I know I'm closer to what my mind says I should sound like.
We're catching up with the voice of the Super Bowl on radio on Westwood One, Kevin Harlan. He's kind enough to join us here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. Really enjoying our conversation together as he joins us here today. What about from feedback? You were talking about being your harshest critic, and that's fairly typical in the radio industry. And I think it would surprise a lot of people that you're still going back and listening back to your games and hearing the television and the radio calls and critiquing yourself and self-evaluating. What about from the feedback side? Who was somebody that listened to you that really helped you along the way?
Well, when I was in college, I had a person there was the voice of the Jayhawks, a guy named Tom Hedrick. And Tom Hedrick,
sure.
I think I mentioned earlier that Jim Simpson broadcast the first radio network broadcast of the Super Bowl, but he did it on NBC and the CBS broadcast on CBS radio was done by Tom Hedrick. They took the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, which Tom was, and put him with a national announcer out of Chicago whose name, for whatever reason, escapes me right now. And he was working for CBS radio, and they wanted the feel of one of the team's broadcasters. And I think they gave Tom the option of doing the Chiefs broadcast or doing the CBS national broadcast, and he chose the CBS radio national broadcast. So that's his history. And then he was the voice of the Cincinnati Reds and the voice of Nebraska, I think, for a couple years, and finished off his career as the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. And when I was just out of high school, I went to Kansas at Tom's urging, and he let me work on the broadcast with him, football and basketball and baseball, and would give me feedback. And he served as a very early compass for me and was terrific. The interesting thing about the broadcasting business is that if you get feedback, it is usually negative. And as a young broadcaster, you rarely would hear positive things, but you would hear things that you messed up on. A wrong word, a wrong interpretation, whatever it might be. And I've always kind of felt that, you know, when you get critiqued and criticized, whether you're my age now in my mid-50s or when I was 25 years old and 20 years old and just beginning in the business, whether it's right or wrong, there's always a grain of truth in there. And if it's someone's feeling, it's what they feel. I mean, their feelings aren't wrong.
Right.
It's their feelings. So if there's something there, you know, I always kind of took note of it. Whether I took it real seriously or whether I was more hurt than I could use it constructively, I don't know. If I get criticized now, I take it in a constructive way. And I try to look through the thing of is it personal or is it just a feeling and something that may have some validity to it, and you got to sort that out. But I take note of everything negative that I hear. Now I don't go on social media. My kids do, and they will relay things from time to time. I may hear something from our social people at Westwood or CBS or TNT. Someone may pass something along to me. I'll read something, a comment or something like that. I don't spend a lot of time doing it, but if I do read something, if I do hear something, I usually always file it away, and more times than not, there's something that can be improved on. And I think that I think even the best in the business face that. I mean, there was some criticism toward the Super Bowl broadcast on television this past weekend. There is criticism on every broadcast,
right,
and broadcaster. And I think there probably is something that can be gained. So in a business which thrives on communication, there is little communication between the people that employ you and yourself. And I find that incredibly frustrating. CBS actually does a very, very good job at talking to us as a group during the NFL season and giving us their thoughts on whatever it might be. We usually have these conference calls about once a month, and I work with Rich Gannon, and we'll be on there with our producer and director. The four of us will hear feedback from New York on a variety of things, most of which does not deal with on-air, Rich and I type of content, but occasionally does. And they usually, you know, and if it's what they feel, because they're our bosses, we listen. And I take down all the thoughts they have and make sure that I'm very cognizant of that for every broadcast. But you don't hear enough. And I'll occasionally ask, I said, what do you hear? What do you like? What don't you like? And sometimes you get stuff back and sometimes you don't. And it's not what you think might be on their mind. It's something completely different. There's nothing to do with what you were even thinking of that they may bring up. So I gather it all in, whatever I hear or read. But I don't go out on the social media realm and try to dig and see and try to get the temperature. That will drive you nuts. But when I go back and listen, if I've heard something from a boss or a coworker or whatever, I go, you know, do they have a point? And sometimes they do. A lot of times they do, and sometimes they don't. And then I'll discard it. But I think you're always constantly looking for, like, all these players are coached.
Right.
They all have coaches. I don't know why in broadcasting we don't have more people that will coach us. I think we're all begging for, like, actors and actresses and on the stage and in cinema and on television. They get feedback all the time from critics and newspapers, people that know the business, may not have acted themselves, but they know, you know, after being in covering it for so long, what is good and what isn't, or what should be applauded and what should be, you know, talked about. And but we don't have that in broadcast. We have some people that will write, but, you know, it's not as much as I think people would like to read that are in the business about their performance.
Right.
And some guys take it very personal.
And that's fascinating to me, Kevin, because so many broadcasters are looking for that feedback. And I'm curious to know why you think that is. Is it because people that are running the show, whether it be at CBS or TNT or wherever, Fox, NBC, that they know the level of professionalism that you guys exhibit and sort of assume, well, these guys know what they've been doing? You know, Kevin's done NFL for 33 years. This is his 30th season in the NBA. He doesn't need our coaching. And it sounds like you would say, of course I do. Of course I want to get better. That's what I'm in this to do, is to improve. So it's very surprising to me that that's not something that a lot of these executives and networks are really taking advantage of.
I think, you know, like I said, at CBS, they've been very instrumental in establishing a feedback system, which has worked. But I'd like even more. I'd like it even game to game. And I have a boss at Westwood One, Howard Deneroff, who has done over 30 Super Bowls, produced over 30 Super Bowls in some form or fashion, knows the business, hears countless tapes from broadcasters all over the country. And I had someone say to me one time, he said, you know, if they didn't like you, they wouldn't keep employing you. This is not a, you know, this is not a social service they're holding here. This is not a halfway house. This is a business. And his reputation is on the line with every broadcaster he puts on the air. And if there was something he didn't like or something that you needed to improve on, he would tell you. So I kind of live in that world. Like, if there was something that was there that was not right, I know that my bosses at Turner, certainly at Westwood, and I know they do at CBS,
yeah,
would give us feedback. I think we would like even more, though. Like, you think Tom Brady likes to get the feedback from Josh McDaniels every time he walks to the sideline after a successful or unsuccessful series? Absolutely. They want to be coached. Athletes want to be coached. Well, broadcasters are kind of the same way. Ratings is not a good way to do it, although I guess it's one gauge of how a broadcaster does. Reaction on social media, I guess, can be followed by your employers to see, you know, what the public thinks, because that's kind of like an immediate focus group, if they like you or don't like you. And focus groups do, I think, hold the rudder on a lot of the decisions that are made with announcers at the networks. Like I said, CBS has been very proactive in setting up a once-a-month meeting to talk to its NFL announcers, which is incredibly appreciated. And I every word they say, I hang on. So it's just different at each of the places I work. I guess I feel, Ben, that I've got enough trust in them that they would say, hey, Kevin, you're messing up. Or, hey, Kevin, we like the way this sounds. Or we need you to tweak this or talk less or talk more or be less of this and more of that or whatever, if they really felt it. I know my bosses well enough that I assume they feel that they could call me at any time and say it. But it isn't the constant. And maybe that there's something built in there too, because if they were constantly saying, "Hey, talk this, do this, do," it would just become white noise,
right?
And it would completely mess you up.
To be able to find the balance in all of it, I think would be
true.
A reasonable expectation.
Yeah, but we don't. I would like more. I think they feel like less is more. So I'll live in that world and rely on my own instincts to guide me as I listen to broadcast after broadcast and play after play to try to judge, you know, where I am, if I need to tweak this, alter that, edit this, whatever it might be.
I know you have a few minutes left, and I do appreciate your time. Kevin Harlan, the radio voice of the Super Bowl on Westwood One. You can also hear him on the NFL on CBS and the NBA on TNT as well. He's kind enough to join us here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. You know, it's crazy to think that here you are, and I mentioned it before, 33 years broadcasting NFL games in your 30th season now with the NBA, and both of those started on the local level. You had the 8 years with Kansas City. I believe it was 9 years with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And now that you're on the national platform, and obviously it's a great accomplishment to be able to broadcast games on the national level, but I'm curious to know what you miss about being the local voice of a team.
Well, I miss being a part of a family because you know everybody in that organization. You see them every day. You feel like there's an office to go into. There are friendly faces that greet you. And you don't have that when you're a network announcer. I'm living in Kansas City and up in Wisconsin. We split our time. My bosses are in New York for Westwood One and for CBS, and my bosses are in Atlanta for Turner Broadcasting. I never see them. I'll go years without really sometimes having a long conversation with any of my superiors. I'll see them at All-Star Games. I see them at seminars. There may be a quick hello. Sometimes we do get in a conversation, which I always, you know, embrace and is always fun. But they've got like 20 guys just like me that they've got to talk to, and most are the flagship announcers, the voice of the network. You know, Marv Albert at Turner or Jim at Jim Nance at CBS or whoever. So you never get the kind of time you'd like in front of them, and not that you're needy or anything like that. But unlike when I would do the Chiefs, I could see the owner, Lamar Hunt, who hired me for the Chiefs. I could see him, you know, every weekend for sure, you know, for 16 weekends, and sometimes during the week when I go out there to do interviews. I'd see Marty Schottenheimer. I'd see the general manager, Carl Peterson. I would see these people, like, almost every day, and they became like family. You got to see them. You got to appreciate them. They got to see you on an everyday basis as their employee. And that's kind of nice. And when you broadcast locally, you broadcast to people that are Chiefs fans, and that or Timberwolves fans. And I was thinking of Merrill Reese, who's the longest tenured radio voice in the National Football League for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm thinking, you know, for over 40 years, he's felt a part of that family.
Right.
And he is embraced by the fans as part of their family. And that is a very special relationship. When I was first starting in the business, I thought, wouldn't it be great to be like a Kaywood Ledford at Kentucky, or John Ward at Tennessee, or Larry Munson down at Georgia, or some of these legendary college broadcasting voices that had done the school football and basketball games for decades. And, you know, the guy that went there, and then his son who went there, and his son's son who went to that school, they all grew up listening to Kaywood Ledford do University of Kentucky or all those other voices I talked about as a longtime voice of that university. That is what I envisioned my career would be. Could I become the voice of the Jayhawks or the voice of the Missouri Tigers or whoever? And that's what I thought my career would be. And I really like that feeling that you could go in and feel like you were part of something like bigger than you. Now, as a network announcer, You're broadcasting one day in Cincinnati, the next day in Los Angeles, one day in Green Bay, the next in Dallas. Like, there's no pattern that really matches up with building any kind of allegiance. But what I have found out is interesting. The longer you are on the national level, and I've done this now on the national level since 1991 when I started with ESPN, people become nationally... They have listened to you for all these years. And while it's a much slower process and takes a much longer time, they now are used to your voice, maybe used to your call, and there is a familiarity there which is somewhat comforting. They know you now, and it's not kind of an unknown voice coming in. And while that may take a shorter amount of time if you're doing a university's games, it eventually, the longer you're on the national level, kind of seeps into that area. Not that you're embraced by all, by any means, but you can kind of feel sometimes, the longer I'm at the national level, that familiarity, welcome to Oklahoma City, Great to have you back in New York. It's wonderful to have you back in Boston. You know, from ushers and people that may see you as you walk onto the floor into a press box, and that is so gratifying. And you feel so good because you feel, even though you're kind of nomadic in where you go and do these games, like there is a friendly face to say, welcome back, it's good to see you. And that is always so sincerely appreciated.
And even in the slow process of connecting yourself with the audience on a national level, I'm sure there have been plenty of times in your life where someone has come up to you and has remembered one of the calls that you feel like you've been known for a long time. Or has there been a moment where somebody ever approached you or you were talking to somebody and they brought up a call that you didn't even think about connected with somebody, but it meant something special to them, something out of the ordinary?
Yeah, Ben, that happens a lot, actually. But it happens from different ways, like somebody, when I did the Eagles NFC Championship game a couple weeks ago in Philadelphia, they played a lot of those highlights in the Philadelphia market, ran into some fans, some Philly fans in Minneapolis this past weekend, and they recited a couple lines I had made. There was a great catch by was it Jeffrey, I think, and in that game he had a couple touchdown catches against the Vikings defense. I may have said something in a certain way that they repeated. There have been some things on the 2K video game NBA series that I've said over the years, and they'll take a line that I've said out of that. Certainly in the NBA, which lends itself to a more colorful call for whatever reason. In the NCAA tournament, there have been a couple of plays over the years that I've used that people will come up and they'll say there was this kid named Farouk Manesh who was shooting for Northern Iowa against Kansas when they were the number one overall seed going back, what, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And they'll replay that line if I see them in an airport or something. So sure, yeah, that happens, and that's fun. I'm sure every broadcaster gets that, though. Local, national, every broadcaster gets that because that's what people associate with that person, and that's always so nice to hear and fun and I chuckle with them and so that's always a nice feeling that they for whatever reason remember a line like you say or a call that they can kind of bring back to you and they may not even really even know your name but they'll hear your voice or they'll see your face and go, hey, you're the guy that has no regard for human life. You're the guy who says, could this be the dagger against Duke? You know, I mean, they'll say stuff like that, and I kind of laugh, and I say, thank you for remembering. You're very nice to bring that up. And so that's always kind of fun.
Have you found anybody that does a spot-on Kevin Harlan impression or impersonation yet?
No, I mean, they'll do it when they say it. Like if they say, is this the dagger against whatever, you know, and they'll say stuff like that. No, I'm sure people have better things to do with their time than that. But they remember those lines, and that's what kind of sticks. And so they may try to do you after that. Like, I remember I've walked around with Marv before, and, you know, and
everyone's got a Marv impression,
too. They'll give his yes call or his, you know, Michael Jordan call, which are just iconic calls. And I'm sure Keith Jackson, when he would walk through airports and into football stadiums, would get the whoa Nellies and all that. And Jim Nance, you know, with his signature, hello, friends. You
right.
know, I mean, the things that people, I mean, people, I think, when they bring that up, I think they really like it because they like saying it because it reminds them of a fun moment when they were watching a game or they try to connect with the broadcast. I mean, like, what do you say if you see someone like that famous, like if you see a movie star, if you see a politician, or if you see a whatever, somebody of note, like what would you say? Like you come up to them and say, hi, nice to meet you, or would you like to say, I think the person would take it better when you say something that they've done that was memorable. And I think that, at least that's for me, I always think, well, that's a nice thing for them to say. You know, they went out of their way, and I know it's not easy sometimes to go up to people and say things. And when they do, I always appreciate the difficulty it is for some to go up to somebody and say something like that. I think it's hard for people to say thank you or I appreciate what you do to just a total stranger. But when they do, I realize that, and I always that means probably more than anything. So I love it, and it's fun. It doesn't happen all that often. I try to stay pretty in the shadows, but if for whatever reason, if I'm walking into an arena, you can't help it, or a press box in the NFL, and people will say nice things, and it's always greatly appreciated. It really is.
I want to get you out on this, Kevin, and I do appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun.
I've probably been a good. I apologize for the length of my answers, but you bring up things. You know, I love the business, and I love talking about it. And to rising people like yourself in the business, it's fun to talk back and forth, and you ask great questions. So I've enjoyed the conversation. Myself.
Likewise, and it does mean an awful lot for your time, so thank you. I want to get you out on this because this is your 8th Super Bowl, I believe, for Westwood One last Sunday. Just an absolute classic, and I'll think back on all the different storylines with Nick Foles and the guts to call the Philly special to Doug Peterson and him rolling the dice and calling for the trick play on 4th and goal at the goal line. You had just a brilliant offensive performance by Tom Brady, but still not being enough. And now you're hearing more and more about the curious decision for Bill Belichick to bench Malcolm Butler. And obviously he could have played a role in possibly slowing down Philadelphia's offense. When you reflect back on this Super Bowl, what do you think the narrative will ultimately become?
I think it will probably deal with the Philadelphia side. First Super Bowl ever for them. First NFL championship since 1960 for a city that has a incredibly passionate fan base. You know, Boston kind of was held in this regard, I guess, but they had, you know, Celtic wins, you know, recently in 2007 and 8 with Pearson, with Garnett. Bruins, you know, have continually been a team that has had a degree of success over the years. Certainly the Red Sox, what they've done in the 2000s, and Patriots. You know, Boston has always been that great city. New York certainly is. I don't know why we always think of Eastern cities, but Philadelphia has been kind of left out. You know, they've had the 76ers have won. We know the Phillies have won, but the Eagles, I think that is a football city first and foremost, and they're passionate about their Eagles. They've come so close. They've had Super Bowl appearances they've just never been able to capture. So I guess I'll remember more than anything just the passion of their fans, the great number that traveled to Minnesota to be there to watch, seeing people crying in the stands. I just saw a headline the other day, and I've got to go back and read this. Ray Dittinger, who's a writer, a longtime writer in Philadelphia, who had covered a lot of Eagles games over the years, covers the NFL, is a Hall of Fame NFL writer, respected coast to coast for his appraisal of games, his writing of the National Football League, certainly of the Eagles. I guess he was somewhat emotional when he saw what, if I read the headline correctly, it just means so much. Not that it means more than a Kansas Cityan or a Minnesotan or a Denver fan, but it has been a long time for Philadelphia. And they have been so passionate. So I'll remember for them what this must have meant for generations of Eagles fans. And I think for, you know, the Patriots, they've been great fans, the best fans, every bit as passionate as Eagles fans, but they've won so much. You know, they've won so many times. They've been through this, but the Eagle fans haven't. So it's fun to kind of spread the success around a little bit and to see these great fans do, you know, live in a situation where they've got the wonderful success of their team and what they've been able to accomplish.
Kevin, I can't thank you enough for your time today and just all the stories and the memories shared. This was a lot of fun, and congrats on all your success. And also, I should congratulate you as well, the 2017 National Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports Media Hall of Fame. It is well-deserved. I will continue to enjoy hearing you on Westwood One. Your descriptions of the games that you broadcast on the radio are an absolute joy, as well as watching your games on TNT and on CBS. This has been a joy for me. So thank you very much for the time, and really do look forward to catching up again soon.
Ben, thank you very much. You're so kind to ask. I appreciate your kind words more than you know. It means a lot that you and Awful Announcing would have me on and talk about the business of broadcasting. But coming from an up-and-comer like yourself on your way to a very great career. Thank you very much. I'll tell you what, I wish I were 29, Ben. I wish I were your age again. It's starting all over. I hate the fact that I'm probably entering the fourth quarter of my career, but I'm still, when I see guys like Marv and Vern Lundquist and Dick Stockton and working to their mid-70s, they probably have a good 20 years left. But boy, to be a young guy like yourself in this business and with all that's ahead of you and all the fun experiences you're about to go through yourself as a broadcaster, I'm jealous because I know this is a great business. It can be a tough business, as you know, but it's a great business and one that that I've enjoyed and been blessed to be a part of beyond measure. I'm an incredibly blessed man. And I haven't even mentioned my family, but I'll give 15 seconds there.
Please.
So much of this has been because of my wife of over 30 years, who has been by my side, who's been alone a lot of times when I've been on the road, raised four kids, and that has been as much a blessing in being with her and them through this journey as the business has itself. So I'm a very lucky guy, and getting to talk to guys like you every once in a while is another post in that great journey that I am very appreciative of. So thank you. It's been fun visiting with you and talking about the business.
My thanks to the great voice of the Super Bowl on Westwood One and also the voice of the NBA on TNT and the NFL on CBS, Kevin Harlan, for joining us on the Awful Announcing Podcast today. Always curious to get your guys' feedback, something that Kevin and I had a conversation about as well. You can certainly give us some feedback of yours as well. At Awful Announcing on Twitter, I am at Benny Heiss. And also, please do rate and review us over on the iTunes Store. Certainly do appreciate everything that you guys have to say on how we can improve the podcast, things you like, things you don't like, so on and so forth. We will be back next week with another edition of an Awful Announcing Roundtable. Looking forward to bringing that to you coming up next week. But until then, my name is Ben Heisler. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.